You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my gun.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, Annie here for Showreel. Showreel looks at the Australian film industry, moving image industry. First up, we have a sneak preview of the upcoming Melbourne Queer Film Festival. The full program will be released on the 16th of October, but I had a chat with David Martin Harris, MQFF CEO and MQFF Program Director Cerise Howard, for their thinking on this year's program.
The theme for this year is formative sound and vision. So give my listeners an understanding of where you're coming from when you see that in the context of Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Well, there's... if I go back to sort of the origin of this theme, the inspiration for the theme, there's a British author, a northerner named Daryl W. Bullock, who has written a number of tomes excavating hidden histories of queer musicians. And the book in particular of his that most inspired this theme is David Bowie Made Me Gay, 100 Years of LGBT Music. And it's an extraordinary treasure trove of information about musicians, some very well known, others lesser well known, some of whom were never out and queer and out in their lifetime, or their queerness only became apparent in hindsight or public in hindsight. So this idea of somebody making me gay, or you know, making me queer, I mean, that's obviously a provocation, but it certainly speaks to a reality for many queer people where they sort of come out to themselves in the first instance and then to others through encounters with kindred spirits in media, whether it's recorded media of the audio persuasion or video, or in our stock and trade, audio visual media, in particular cinema. But you know, the music video is also an art form that runs parallel to all this, and that was hugely influential in introducing an enormous amount of queerness into homes the world over, especially from the 80s, early 80s onwards. And you know, people of my generation, we just absorbed that. Myself, I didn't really quite clock what was going on in a lot of those clips at the time. In hindsight, I marvel at that fact that the likes of, say, Frankie Goes to Hollywood's clip for Relax, it's not even subtext. It is so in your face queer that, you know, that went over my head. But then again, I was only 12 or something like that at the time. But nonetheless, somehow I feel that that was formative for me and doubtless was for many others. It filtered in. And so we're looking at all manner of ways in which to this day, film and other moving image art forms can help form queer people. So, and that's part of our job too, is to help people find themselves and find their community, find other kindred spirits through attending the festival, sharing in seeing films together, seeing themselves on screen or people not unlike them, leading lives not unlike theirs necessarily, or perhaps unlike this, but aspirationally something they might wish to experience, or also just experiences that resonate. And that just help us continually find ourselves and form us, which is eternally a work in progress.
So, I mean, this has a normalizing effect, I guess, but it's also about a historical perspective as well as a future self-realization. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
In a nutshell, yeah.
No. It's fascinating because, in actual fact, when you say things like seeing yourself on screen, when and it actually tells you why the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, which is the oldest festival of its sort in Australia, has a place, a really important place within our festival culture here.
Well, it's that power of being able to see ourselves reflected back on screen and in the contemporary as well. You know, we represent the zeitgeist of gender and sexuality on an annual basis, and that we call it the alphabet soup, quite affectionately, for LGBTQIA plus communities. We're ever developing and reflecting back those contemporary experiences of gender and of love to the community, and that's incredibly validating and powerful for communities. I think it's life affirming and life changing for people. There's so many people that are coming to the festival who are entering the community for the first time, and boy, are they in for a surprise. But, you know, those people could be 17, they could be 35, they could be 65, they could be 80 and only discovering themselves for the first time. And that's a really important role that we play in the community to facilitate that, finding oneself and also finding your clan, finding yourself in the queer community.
You, Cerise, have sought out quite a huge array of films, and obviously over the entire year you go seeking films, and you talk about excellence in programming. In the media review, it talks about excellence, and there's 42 features and 19 documentaries in this festival. Tell us where you find these fascinating pieces of work.
Oh gosh, you've got to cast the net far and wide. It certainly helps to attend some festivals directly and to mix with other people who have similar gigs, as well as amongst filmmakers and those people who handle film distribution and sales. So earlier this year, I was at the Berlinale, where I had the privilege of sitting on a jury there for their Queer Film Awards, the Teddies, which was very helpful, a good head start. Also attended a festival in San Francisco, Frameline, which is the world's longest running queer film festival, 48 this year. So that helps. The rest is a bit of a mixture of scouring other festivals' programs and reaching out to sales agents and distributors, saying, what have you got? Often they're quite forward in letting people like me know what they've got. You know, it's their job to find placements for the films they're representing. There's also a call for submissions we put out through the Film Freeway platform, and a torrent of films come to us to be assessed, features and shorts, you know, really quite a lot. And that's the way we encounter some films that we really wouldn't find otherwise, because they haven't screened anywhere yet. Some have, but sometimes this is people seeking that world premiere or Australian premiere.
Finding their audience.
Yeah. So it's often a lot of independent filmmakers. They're not part of a greater structure. They're just seeking their own way in the world. Some of them are young, generally emerging. But also we do get some quite experienced and highly reputed filmmakers approaching us directly too, the longer I'm in the role, the more people know to contact me directly. So I get unsolicited submissions from, you know, a variety of channels. In fact, it's a hunt.
What I'm really getting at is that I can see from the program that you've got a lot of premieres, and they're Australian premieres, and there's a lot of films from other countries, and I'm assuming that there's also a strength in Australian filmmaking as well.
Yeah, there is a nice clutch of local filmmaking, art filmmaking. Yeah, it's, I mean, part of our mission is to represent a very broad community. We're anything but monolithic, and to, as best as possible, have as wide a representational focus on our community and all its manifestations across the globe. And that certainly includes locally too, and even trying to make sure that that has diversity embedded within it. So, you know, of the local films, we've got a very, very rare feature-length Indigenous queer film, Heart of the Man. We've got a Victorian film, Strange Creatures, which will have its Victorian premiere with us. We've got a new four episodes of a new season of. It'll be the third season of Single Out, a Melbourne-based episodic. Well, there's another couple of Australian films too, which will occur to me. David, do you recall?
We're not announcing too many right now because
Okay,
we
that's all
haven't
right.
actually launched, but we received something anywhere between 300 and 400 film submissions from all over the globe on an annual basis. And you know, part of the way that we curate too is through a community selection panel as well. So it's there's got to be an intersectional approach to the way that we curate. And so those selection panelists are really important and really, really integral into how we program this festival as well. And you know, it's such a huge volume of texts to get through as well, that having those diverse perspectives on our program really produces, you know, especially with our shorts packages, so many shorts. So like the two Cerise and I couldn't possibly watch all of them at once as well. So it's a really, really wonderful collaborative process that we go through as a community organization to have multiple perspectives in the festival into our program. And that's and the outcome is really, really wonderful.
Yeah, and I also noticed that you've got a variety of different locations, and you've got a variety of different ways people can buy tickets and be part of the
We do.
experience.
So we're back. We're screening this year at Acme. About half the festival will be back at Acme this year, and we're also mounting. We're bringing back the festival lounge for the first time, long awaited, and much in demand. We're bringing back the festival lounge, and that's going to be on theme with Formative Sound and Vision as well. So there's going to be a karaoke bar in there. We're going to have video jukebox, so you can bring up your own favorite video clips throughout the festival period and a range of public programs at Acme. Our friends at the Capitol Theatre in the middle of Melbourne, right across from Melbourne Town Hall, are having us back as well. We love the Capitol Theatre, Cinema Nova in Carlton, and Palace Cinemas in Como in South Yarra as well. So we've got a really, it's nicely centralized, but we've made sure that people can get from one screening to another really easily this year.
Which is great. And I know that, like you said, you aren't revealing the full glamour of the festival until the 16th of October. So people really should be looking out for that full program coming out online. But also the film passes are actually still are available already. People can early
Yeah,
book.
they can. So if you want to check out, we've got about 10 titles as a pre-teaser at the moment, and you can check those out on mqff.com.au. But yeah, you're right, our passes are on sale already if you want to get a good deal and have the first chance to book the best seats in the house. We've also got, you know, accessibility is really important to us at MQFF to make sure that everybody in the queer community can attend. So we've always got really great accessible options. If you're a concession card holder, you can grab $12.50 tickets, but you've got to get in quick. So from when we launch for about 3 days, we've got a $12.50 concession offer going. And we're also launching this year special screenings, matinee screenings for under 25s for only $5. So for the price of a cup of coffee, you can go see a whole feature film. There are matinee shows at the at Acme as well. MQFF Plus is back, our online streaming platform as well. That's really important for us to reach our regional and remote communities, and that's available right across Australia. So anybody in Australia can view a really good selection of films from the MQFF program online.
Thank you. Is there anything I should have asked you? Because this is obviously people, this is only a quick taster for people to realise that they should be putting this on your on their calendar, because the festival runs from November the 14th to the 24th. And this is Ruth just making signposting the fact that it's important for people to keep an eye out for this incredibly interesting film programme.
G'day. My name is Margie Thorpe. You are listening to 3CR Community Radio 855. On your dial.
You're with Annie on Showreel, a look at the Australian moving image industry. And I was lucky enough to have a chat with filmmaker Stephen Hunt and his collaborator and choreographer Vanessa Marion, who have created an award-winning short called Yeah, the Boys. It won the Flickerfest short competition last year, and it takes us into the heart of a boozy night session. No words, just action and insights.
Oh, it was fascinating to see your film. But let's start, Stephen, with the fact that you started your filmmaking journey making documentaries. That was your big love. But this is kind of a different way of exploring documentary, isn't it?
Some ways, yeah. I guess exploring, documenting Australian men and the culture that I've grown up in. So yeah, it very much is an exploration of that, but in a very different way, being influenced by dance and cinema.
Yeah, well, how did it come about? Because I know that, Vanessa, you're a choreographer, and I looked you up, and I'm assuming you are the person who invented groove therapy.
Yeah, I do everything and anything almost to do with movement and dance and how it sits on different bodies. And I initially just thought, wouldn't it be so fun to create a dance piece? And I thought it would be cool to explore Australian masculinity through a feminist lens and to take that one step further and do it entirely through movement and dance. And I wondered if you could pull that off. I was very quickly out of my depth, which is how I brought Stefan on board, not only to direct, but to be our cultural advisor on what it is that Aussie blokes do when they get together and drink. And he was great. He was...
To tell me, because, I mean, it's hard for people to understand how wonderful this film is. It's very short, and you've fit a lot in it. And I was thinking about the actual making of it. I mean, how did you, like, these young fellows are basically having a session in the backyard, but, of course, it's been highly developed into a movement piece, but in a funny kind of way, it doesn't feel awkward or anything like that, or contrived. How did you actually make this happen in such a fluid manner?
Oh my gosh, so many rehearsals, first of all. That wasn't just a freestyle thing that we just shot on the day. It, like, every single fingernail is choreographed, you know, so there was that. But I guess, you know, do you have anything to any input for that, Steph, as far as...
Well, I think for the listeners, just to paint a picture of what this is, it's a short film called Yeah, the Boys, and in 7 minutes, which is not a lot of time, like you said, we show an afternoon drinking session from a sunny arvo well into the night, and all of the different elements that come into play during that, from the cheeky larrikinism through to the turbo drunk moment of doing outrageous things, through to moments of anger and brutality with each other, with, you know, fights and wrestling. And then this very tender moment when everyone is completely off their face, but somehow supporting each other, and nearly those moments where mates tell each other that they love one another. And so we wanted to do that through dance, and Vanessa, being so incredible with movement, rehearsed for probably about 4 weeks in total to get this to look like there wasn't even any dancing happening at all. You don't even realise that's happening in this film.
Yeah, I know. It's really amazing. Who are the actors? Who are the boys?
You know what? They're all professional dancers. Though you wouldn't be able to tell in that. They just look like a bunch of drongos, which is awesome. It was really fun to bring that character out in each of them too, because they're actually quite sensitive and tuned in, aren't they? And so, yeah, a lot of this was about exploring this concept of larrikinism and how fun it is until it's not. And it asks the audience when they stop finding it funny, if they even do find it funny, or even if they do stop finding it funny. So that was really fun to explore, and it's been awesome hearing people's feedback on that. It's just been a fun process.
Well, actually, that was what I would like to know, because reading this biography of you, it says here, I'm particularly fascinated with street dance and the way it is born outside of the dance studio context, often by an oppressed people in reaction to political and socioeconomic turmoil. And it struck me that what you're showing in this backyard, in this dance sequence, would quite possibly be quite confronting to quite a lot of people, as well as the dancers themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's from what I've heard, I can't speak on behalf of people, but I guess what we've been told is it's confronting for people for different reasons. For non-Aussie blokes, a lot of them relate to the girlfriend in the opening scene and that feeling of being on the outside, you know?
Yeah.
For some people, they relate to the camera, being the only sober person in the room, watching things unfold and kind of being a bit like, ugh. And then for other people, it's confronting because they are the guys in this film and they are usually drunk along with them, and this is one of the first times they witness what a sesh looks like sober. And so that's kind of the range of reactions we've gotten, I feel.
Yeah, right. And an interesting thing is that there is no moralisticness in it.
What was that, sorry?
You're not being moralistic.
Oh, yeah.
No, and I think that was a really important thing for Vanessa and I. It's so easy for people to talk about, you know, toxic masculinity and just paint men in this really terrible light when we all know so much exists in the grey zone and there's, you know, so many different layers to a lived experience. So we said we wanted to show tenderness, brutality and larrikinism all in one, because they're such important parts of what it makes up to be a male in Australia.
Well, yeah, and I think on that note, for me personally, you know, I'm an Indian immigrant, I'm a woman, I've never even sunk a full beer in my life, so it was a fun thought experiment on who gets to tell a story and can you successfully tell a story that is outside your identity and lived experience. And to me, success means that people of that culture or subculture come up to you after and they're like, I know that party. I know that guy. I am that guy. Oh, my gosh, you so nailed it. And the reason I wanted to achieve that was because I feel a lot of stories are told on behalf of, you know, women or immigrants or people of colour and not by us. And oftentimes we watch and we're like, that doesn't feel like real or what it really is. You know, so that my aim wasn't to make anyone look bad or good. I just wanted people to feel seen and to feel as though, oh, you really captured the essence of what my lived experience is.
So how did you do that? I mean, this is, like I said, it's in a funny kind of way, it's a thought experiment, a documentary as well. And because it has no, except for the beginning bit where the girlfriend's so cute to the boy, There are no sounds or of that sort, no talking. How did you plot it?
That's a really great question. I mean, I think Vanessa and I are always drawn to, like, genre blending, you know, films or any type of the arts where you can't quite pinpoint what it is. And I think that's part in striving to do something that's original, but then also thinking about, well, why are we doing it that way? And for us, we loved this idea of telling a story about men where we don't use any words or any dialogue, because that is such a relatable way that men communicate. We communicate through action, and the whole film, you can follow such a story, but there's not a single word uttered.
And also a lot of communication through what is unsaid. So we did consider having words and dialogue in there, and we just kept scrapping it because we were like, well, you can say that without saying it. And that's how sort of the end product came about.
Yeah, well, it's pretty extraordinary. And how did you get the Avalanches on board, and how did they marry the... you didn't just have a song that they'd made. They actually scored the film, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we filmed the film and we used the other tracks as a guide that we choreographed to. And then once we got into the edit and we sliced it all together, we sent it to the Avalanches and said, look, here is this project. This is what it's about. Does it resonate? And they saw it and just said, yeah, it really does. We love what this is about. And being Australian, they could also relate to it. And so we went on a great long journey of making the music and many rounds of revisions because it is so choreographed and the timing is so key to the execution of this piece. But we love the music that they created. It really makes it such an experience.
And it's so clear that they're an Australian scored it because of all the samples in there from, you know, what were their cockatoos? There were
burrows.
Yeah, cars revving, the Rage soundtrack. Like, there's just so many things that are just so quintessentially Aussie sampled throughout all the score.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's completely seamless. It's quite extraordinary. And the other thing I wanted to know about it from a filmmaking point of view, where did you put the camera? What were you doing with the camera?
That's a great question because the entire film for 7 minutes is only four shots. So they're very long takes. The majority of them we did on a Steadicam. We had this amazing Steadicam operator named Justin Besser, and he was essentially the seventh dancer. He had to learn a choreography of where to be at what time, where to point the camera, and as a result, you get this really seamless, you know, vibrant, flowing camera through an afternoon session of drinking beers.
Yeah, it's amazing. The other thing I wanted to know was, I mean, it's done very well. I mean, you won the best short at Flickerfest, for example. Does that mean you're going to the Academy Awards?
Oh, I mean, it certainly means that we qualify to apply to maybe get nominated. To try to be humble about it.
I mean, look, if you know someone there, please connect us. It allows us to apply, which is really great. Like, there's only a certain amount of film festivals in the world that you need to win to be able to apply for it. So, look, we'll give it a red-hot go, but we're not holding our breath.
Yeah.
We'll see, you know, how well...
We're really honoured.
We're really honoured. I mean, the film is called Yeah, the Boys, and we actually played it at Palm Springs Film Festival in the US, and they referred to the film as Yes, the Guys. So there might be some, you know, cultural breakdown there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll give it a red-hot go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is that you decided to... I'm thinking about your artistic process, really. I know that might sound naff, but it's fascinating to me to think that you sat down and you thought, this is what I want to do. Did you self-finance?
Yes, yes. So we basically, like most short films, put our own money into it, and then also Exit Films, who is my commercial rep, they put some money into it as well because they really loved what it was about. But it's always a funny one when you say, hey, we want to make a film about Aussie men drinking beers told through dance and movement. It's a weird pitch, but I think...
Because it hasn't been done before. So I think a lot of people picture, like, tap dancing and some sort of musical number. And you're like, but not like that. But not like anything we can show you as a reference. Could you just trust us?
It couldn't be more opposite to tap dancing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're really grateful to everyone who came on board and... purely because they wanted to support a friend, because it's a hard sell otherwise, I think.
That's it for Showreel this week. Tune in next week for more Australian film fun.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Lower the curtain down in Memphis. Lower the curtain down, all right. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have known what you would find. And it's something quite peculiar. Something shimmering and white.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.